Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It's a Tuesday. Draft is inching closer in the NFL. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, right here on FS1. Michael Vick this hour. Dan Mullen, coach of the Florida Gators, next hour. Kyle Pitts, coach. He faced all these Alabama guys, top of the draft. It was all about these players. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm good. Kyle Trask is coach also.
Yes, Kyle Trask. He may sneak into the first round. So Dan Mullen's been one of the smarter offensive guys in college football for the last 10 years. Coach Dak Prescott, obviously.
He's got to be very proud as a college coach. You know, we don't really ever talk about that. Like, if you're a college coach and you got a kid that you recruited and
Dak Prescott
helped develop, and then they get drafted and
make $40 million
a
year,
make $40 million, you got to be proud of that.
Yeah, yeah. Dan and Dak have done very well for themselves. So Steph Curry, you know I love Steph Curry, right? You know that. That goes beyond. I've been defending Steph Curry forever. I don't think I've ever been critical of Steph Curry. I am Mr. Steph Curry, and last night, he hit 10 threes and scored almost 50. And I'm not here to be Debbie Downer, but I actually wasn't blown away. I mean, to score 49 points in an NBA game is big. But Steph Curry has been on a streak for a month now that's insane. And he didn't suddenly get this much better. Let's add context. It has been a terrible year for defense in the NBA. Do you know we're going to have the top four highest offensive ratings ever in league history all this year? The most points scored in 50 years in the NBA this year. The players didn't suddenly all get great. They didn't just suddenly start shooting threes. Folks, it's been an awful year to play defense, and there's an explanation for it. Because it's a condensed schedule, what does that mean? Players are more exhausted. It's a shortened offseason. What does it mean? Players are more exhausted. What part of the game do you give up when you're exhausted? You don't give up points in offense because that pays you. We've also had more DNPs, did not play for star players, resting for the playoffs. A prime example, last night, Steph Curry didn't face Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons took the night off. Ben Simmons is a great defensive player. You're getting this all season long where one or two stars don't play, and they would guard the other stars. So last night, Ben Simmons out, Steph Curry goes crazy. By the way, this weekend, Steph Curry went crazy against Boston. Jaylen Brown, DNP, didn't play. Jaylen Brown's a great athlete and a very strong defensive guard. You also have no fans in most of these arenas. What does that mean? It has a very scrimmage feel to it. You ever gone to the YMCA? How good a defense do they play? You ever watch the scrimmage? Nobody's taking a charge at scrimmage. Nobody's taking the big foul at scrimmage. Scrimmages tend to lean offense. So the Steph Currys, the Zions, the Lucas, offensively gifted players are having an absolute field day. Also, because of the increased three-point shooting, and you're noticing this the last couple of years, last 3 years, there's more blowouts. So if a team falls behind by 15, the only way to get back is threes, and if it's not your night shooting threes, the game gets ugly fast. And what happens when the game's 27 points early third quarter? What part of the game do you give up? Defense. Players also this year, it should be noted, and I get it, there's been a little animosity. Most of them didn't want to start the season as quickly as they did, and they didn't want an all-star weekend. So players have kind of decided we're going to pick our spots this year. And where are the players picking their spots? On the offensive end of the floor, because that's how you get paid, and that's how you get shoe deals. And if you worked in your work environment and you are exhausted and you have a little animosity toward your boss, you're going to take a couple shortcuts, but you're not going to take shortcuts on the stuff that gets you paid. So you're taking a lot of stars are taking the night off. Ben Simmons, Jaylen Brown don't face Steph. Both very high, especially Simmons, high-end defensive players. Players are more tired. They're taking the defensive end of the floor off. And we've said this. It is when you have all these superstar teams, the Nets went 19-4 when Kevin Durant didn't play. The Lakers have a winning record, not only without AD, but without LeBron and AD. So if you face the Lakers right now, their defensive rating has gone through the floor since LeBron and AD left. It's not the same team. So this is not a shot at Steph Curry at all. It's not. But you have to add context. There's a reason the Pac-12 and the Big 12 have these wild shootouts. You want to know why? Because they don't have SEC defensive football players. When the Pac-12 and the Big 12 generally go face the SEC, they don't score as many points. So this year, we've already had almost 100 games where a player has scored 40 points. And we have 200 games to go. That is double 10 years ago. It shouldn't double. Like they in economics, if your stock market doubles quickly, they call it a bubble, right? We have an NBA offensive bubble. It's going to burst next year. Guys will come back. They'll be more rested. Stars will take fewer games off, and the offensive numbers will pull back a little bit. So Steph is great. I love him. But this has been an atrocious year for NBA defense. All right, so this story came out yesterday. We did not talk about it. The Broncos have a new general manager. And according to Woody Page, who writes for the Denver Gazette, he's been a journalist in that town for 100 years. They want to move off Drew Lock. They want to. They've called Atlanta, and they're going to move up, and they'd like to get a quarterback. Now, it doesn't mean Atlanta's going to budge, but Denver likes Trey Lance, and they like Justin Fields, and they should. They're both better than Drew Lock. And it's funny about Drew Lock. I get this a lot from Denver fans. You loved him! I did for 5 games. I did. Josh Allen of the Bills and Drew Lock of the Broncos, through 18 games, and that's how many Drews played, are the exact same quarterback. Bad. But here's the difference. The more I saw of Josh Allen, the more I liked him. The more I saw of Drew Lock, the less I liked him. Why? Because Drew Lock is a movie trailer. If you just get the highlights of a comedy, all comedies are funny in the movie trailer. Will Ferrell's never had a bad movie trailer. But Will Ferrell's, by half his movies, aren't that funny. Because all the funny stuff's in the trailer. And that's not a knock on Will Ferrell, because he's had some unbelievable movies. Go watch Alf. It's really good. Old School, all that stuff, or whatever. But Drew Lock's a movie trailer. His highlights are amazing, because he's got a big arm. And he's athletic, pretty athletic. And he takes big swings and risks. And he improvises a lot. So if you watch his highlights or his movie trailer, it's like, whoo! But when you really watch his game, he's got really bad habits. Really loose. There's a little Jameis Winston, although I don't think he's that talented. Really loose, really casual. Thinks his arm is better than it is. Throws the ball up for grabs 5 times a game. Just throws it down the field. And by the way, so when did I like him? Well, at the end of 2019, the last 5 games of the year, he goes 4-1. And I said on the air multiple times, joy is my witness, there's something there. I kept saying, there's something there, I like him. But Denver wasn't good. I wasn't watching the entire game. I was getting the movie trailer. I was getting his highlights. And he's got an arm. And he can move. But Pro Football Focused watched all 5 of those games, every snap. And they graded him with a 58, which is Tebow level. He was terrible. So if you watch the movie, instead of just watching the trailer to comedies, that's why there have been so few great comedies made. There's been a million great trailers for comedies. Every Will Ferrell trailer is hysterical. Jackie Moon was hysterical. Had about 9 good minutes of movie. But the trailer was unbelievable. And what Drew Lock is, he's the anti-Derek Carr of the Raiders. If you watch Derek Carr's highlight film, he doesn't have a huge arm. He's not super mobile. But if you actually watch the movie of Derek Carr, if you watch the games, Derek Carr's pretty good. I mean, he's very comparable to Tony Romo, who I think was one of the more underrated quarterbacks in the last 20 years. Derek Carr's a good player. He's accurate. He's a leader. In big spots, he can be good. He can move a little. He's not super athletic, but he can move a little. Doesn't have a bad arm. He'll throw it over the top. He's a little hesitant. He's not a gunslinger. Sometimes he's a little Alex Smith. You wish he'd let her rip a little more. But the movie of Derek Carr is pretty good. The trailer put you to sleep. Drew Lock's just the opposite. And so it looks like Denver is going to move off him. And if they don't, it's telling you just by the stories that, you know, my dad used to always say this, is that most of the decisions of your employment will be decided when you're not in the room. Lubricate, don't agitate. They're already raising hands in the front office of Denver, and there's more let's move on than keep him. And for this story to leak, they've already made their decision. He may play for another year, but barring just sensational improvement, they're moving on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Mike Tomlin of the Steelers has signed an extension through 2024. It took me a while to figure out Mike Tomlin. Most head coaches, the successful ones, all have one thing when they're in the middle of a losing streak. One thing that defines them. One thing the players know they can trust. For Pete Carroll, it's his energy. Sean Payton, his intensity. It's like nobody else. Bill Walsh, Bill Belichick, it's this sort of academic lean. You always felt they were smarter than everybody they coached against. Andy Reid, it's creativity. And Mike Tomlin, it's a presence. Mike's got a presence. It's why he's one of the few NFL coaches I think could coach at the college football level. He'd walk into, he'd be a great recruiter. But everybody in the NFL, even Belichick, has losing streaks. What do you go to in the losing streak? What do you lean on in the losing streak? Where players find you believable. They know you're better at it than anybody else. And there's a certain presence and believability with Mike Tomlin. And I think I really noticed it when Ben Roethlisberger didn't play. So he's 18 and 15 without Big Ben. And that is something. Kyle Shanahan cannot win football games without Jimmy Garoppolo. How was Belichick without Brady? He is 18 and 15 without Big Ben. He has a winning record with Mason Rudolph and Landry Jones and Dennis Dixon. And a couple of years ago, you had a lot of drama, and Big Ben's not playing well, and he's aging, and they can't run, and the wheels are coming off, and Mike Tomlin is the duct tape. Listen, this league is hard. Pete Carroll's been fired twice, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Tom Coughlin, his last 4 years, couldn't win any games. With a Hall of Fame quarterback, Eli Manning, it's a hard league to win. And when you go to those losing streaks, you can lose games. You can't lose a locker room. Tomlin never loses a locker room. Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, never lose a locker room. You've got to have something about you. And players respect Tomlin. He's an alpha. He's got a presence. He believes in himself. And you can just feel it at the podium. He is blunt. He is brutal. He is honest. He holds himself accountable. And that believability, that bluntness, that presence is why he's 18 and 15 without a Hall of Fame quarterback. Tom Coughlin could not win games, and he's going to the Hall of Fame. Sean Payton, once they paid Drew Brees too much, had losing records. Big Ben's not taking a lot of pay cuts. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing record.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Dabo Swinney talking about how he is simply, even among Clemson players, and they've had Deshaun Watson, he's just different.
If you watch Steph Curry shoot the ball, it's just like, you just go, wow. Just to sit there and watch this guy shoot a basketball. Well, that's how you feel when you watch Trevor throw a football. When you get to see him live and you get to see him move, you just go, wow. I mean, it's just different. He's a face of a franchise guy.
What's interesting, and this is really true in the South, where college football is the king, the quarterbacks are worshipped. And nobody's been more worshipped than Trevor Lawrence because he's been the number one pick for the last 3 years the first time he stepped on the field. And the NFL is not like that. It is business. And just to give you an example, that Trevor Lawrence, after his dad said, you know, he's not defined by football, and Trevor Lawrence said, I don't play with a chip on my shoulder. Trevor Lawrence, a day later, rushed to explain what he was saying. Now, why would he do that? He's going to be the number one pick. Why did Trevor Lawrence, within 36 hours, rush to clarify his comments? Because it was bad for business. There's no way you want to sign a shoe deal because he's going to go on losing streaks and people are going to say, well, I mean, you don't play with a lot of urgency. You're already giving people a negative narrative to grab and hold on to if you struggle. And Mark Sanchez told me this Sunday night. I talked to Mark Sanchez and he said, you know, I played at USC, LA, and then I went to the Jets. And I thought, this is going to be an easy transition. Right? Like the LA press can be tough on you. If you lose, they'll call you out. And it's LA. You got LA Times, talk radio, big stations, sportscasters, you know. And he goes, then you go to New York and you're a pro. It's not the size of the city. You're a pro. And they don't treat you the same. They go after you a little bit. You could say something to a writer when you're a college player and then, you know, and you're a pro player getting paid. And he goes, I made a couple jokes. All of a sudden you look at headlines in the New York Post. You're like, okay, I'm going to go to Stock Answers. I got to pull back. It's totally different. Once you get paid, you get treated differently. The expectations go up. That's why Trevor Lawrence came and literally, I want to clarify my comments. It was bad for business. It's his first interception. But one of the reasons he's going to succeed is his talent. That's a huge one. Urban Meyer's another one. But this is also part of it. Jacksonville's perfect. If he would have said, you know, I'm not defined by football, and he got drafted by the Jets, you would have to clarify that 100 times until the season started. They would be all over you. And New York is not as forgiving. Jacksonville's a college market. So it's almost going to be like a second college career with a college coach. I remember spending a week in Jacksonville during the Super Bowl. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the Super Bowl was not the lead story in the newspaper. The local newspaper talked about high school football recruiting day. Jacksonville is a college market that has an NFL team. And what does that mean? They're not going to pound on you. It's going to be a very forgiving college market with a pro team. Also, Jacksonville, now some small markets are tough on their athletes. Pittsburgh, because they have a great history. So they're going to be all over you. Juju Smith, he gets banged on every time he does social media stuff. But you don't have that either because they have no history. I mean, in Green Bay, you play poorly, you can get called out because the expectations are high. So Jacksonville's a small college market, kid gloves. It has no history to speak of. What are the standards? It is literally the perfect place as long as you have a good coach. And what is Urban Meyer's specialty? Developing young quarterbacks. Alex Smith, Tim Tebow, Dwayne Haskins. I mean, Justin Fields maybe early. I mean, this is, I guess Justin was gone. This is perfect. This is a perfect landing spot. If he'd have said that and had to get drafted by New York, it would chew him up for weeks.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NBA MVP, we don't give valuable. We just go stats and stories. So I would give you my top five this morning, and you're gonna not believe it. But again, it's called valuable. This is who I would give the MVP to.
Okay.
Number five.
LeBron James. Hold on. You're going to freak out. LeBron's played 41 games. He's going to come back and play the final 11 or 12. That'll give him 53 of 72 games. That is three quarters of a season. Do the math. That's almost 75% of games. The Lakers have not beaten a team over 500 that's fully stocked since he left. They beat the Nets without James Harden and the Jazz without Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. They have plummeted defensively. They have plummeted offensively. They're the 27th best offense in the league without LeBron James. They won the title last year. I don't care that he took 25% of the games off. Not playing. They have plummeted as a franchise. They are a 500 team that can't beat good teams. But in the NBA, there's so many bad ones, they can stay at 500. LeBron's five.
Number four.
Steph Curry. He's going to have better numbers than when he won MVP, but here's the key. It's a bad basketball team that is 1-7 when he doesn't play. When he does play, they have a winning record and will make it to the playoffs. This is not a good team. Klay Thompson's out. Wiseman's now hurt. It's Kelly Oubre's talented, but Draymond's past his prime. It's not a very good team until he plays. And then his numbers this year are better than his MVP season he'd before.
Number three.
I'll say it again, Jimmy Butler. He is a 500-1 shot to win it. Jimmy Butler. This is a young team bordering sometimes on immature. Bam, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. He has to babysit some of these guys. They were early in the year when he got COVID. He was out for 10 games a month. They were atrocious defensively. Now they're top five in the league defensively. So unlike a James Harden, you get everything on both ends of the floor. They're a bad basketball team, and that's with Eric Spoelstra, who's a Hall of Fame coach. They're 6-11 in the East when he doesn't play. 24-17 when he does. Again, valuable. He's got some LeBron qualities. Like, he, on both ends of the floor, dramatically changes the effort and maturity of your team.
Number two.
Nikola Jokic, Denver, bad body, I understand. But Jamal Murray, second best player, top 20 player in the league. He's out. They're 7-1 this year when Jamal Murray doesn't play. And again, after Jamal Murray, Michael Porter's a young kid. He's on pace to become the first player in the league history to average 25, 10, and 8 assists and shoot 55 from the field. But it's not a statistical award. He is the best passing big man from Bill Walton. He gets so many players on this team open looks and good looks because you often have to double him. He's the classic value additive. He makes players better. Westbrook makes everybody worse. That's why Jokic, to me, is valuable.
Number one.
Chris Paul. Do you understand this? 11 straight winning seasons. Now, that wouldn't be impressive if you played for, a well-coached team. No, that's with the Hornets, Suns, Tanking Thunder, Clippers, Rockets. 11 straight winning years. By the way, the Suns have the second best record in the NBA. Now, do you understand for 11 years in a sport where almost everybody makes the playoffs, they were a tire fire. Phoenix was miles out of the playoffs. By the way, last year, Oklahoma City wanted to tank. Chris Paul got him a 4 or 5 seed in the West. He leaves. Now they're on an 11-game losing streak. Next to LeBron James, nobody in the NBA has the ability to change your basketball team's win-loss standings. Nobody except Chris Paul. Doesn't dunk, he's not flashy, doesn't shoot threes, so nobody loves Chris Paul.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I first noticed Dan Mullen years ago. So Urban Meyer's my friend. I've known Urban for a long time. And I lived on the West Coast, and this guy named Urban Meyer came to Utah, and he started beating all these Pac-12 teams. And, Cal's and Oregon's, and I was telling my buddies, I'm like, I don't know who Urban Meyer is, but they don't have the NFL players of all these Oregon's and all these other teams out West, and they're beating them. Well, under him was a guy named Dan Mullen, and Dan Mullen was under Urban for 3 or 4 of those jobs, including Utah, Florida. Then Dan gets a job at Mississippi State, of course, had Dak Prescott. Dan's now gone to Florida, a powerhouse, and they're off to a great start, led the nation in his 3 years there. A lot of wins, led the nation in offense. He is one of the really creative, smart guys. And I asked this a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Kyle Trask. I said, is Kyle Trask good, or is Dan Mullen make all his quarterbacks look this good? I don't know. So Dan Mullen now, Florida Gator football coach, joining us live. First of all, Coach, you've done a great job. Thank you so much. I covered the Gators years and years ago when I worked in Tampa. It's the loudest stadium I've ever been in. And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, great to be with you. I appreciate it. I love that lead-in right there. That was very complimentary.
Let's start with Kyle Pitts. So one of the things you're known for, you're probably the most ripped off coach in the SEC. People take all your schemes and you move guys around and you very much, you make multiple sets. You make it very tough to defend. When did you first notice with Kyle Pitts? Take me to the moment, coach, a practice or a game when you went, oh boy, I can put him anywhere on the field.
Well, I think he came in as a freshman and we played him mostly a wide receiver. And the I had him flexed out. We had some depth at tight end. He was still growing and maturing in his strength, and we didn't have great depth of wide receiver. And all of a sudden, we put him out there as our X receiver, and he made some unbelievable plays, was learning how to be a route runner, learning how to use his body and his leverage, and thought, okay, this guy has a chance to be special. But all of a sudden, he came back the next year. He grew into his tight end body, and then that's when it became fun, because now you have this guy with that's 6'6", 240 pounds, that can play tight end. He can set the edge. They got to respect him as a tight end within the running game in just how they fit the runs, how they set the defense. But then you start moving around and you create the matchups. And he's just, he has elite wide receiver skills, but he sets the matchups that you get him on people that they don't want to have covering him.
Can he block at all, coach? That's the knock on him. Can he block at all?
Absolutely. You're not going to make a level. You're silly if you have him and you're going to say, hey, this guy's going to be a blocking tight end for us. But now they're going to have to try to create a matchup. Who are they going to put on him? So if all of a sudden they're going to say, okay, we got to have a bigger safety on him, or a bigger corner on him, and you put him into the core of the formation, well, that safety or corner now has to come fit in the core. He has to fit the run place. Okay. So he can cover up defensive end. He's not going to make a living knocking him off the ball. He can cover up. He can set the edge. He can set the point on the run game. But now if you try to create a matchup, now you put a corner or a nickel on him, he's going to blow those guys off the ball. Then he becomes a dominant blocker within the matchup that you've created at the point of attack.
So I got to be honest, Kyle Trask, when I first watched him, I thought he was a bit of a plotter. He's talented, but not much of a mover. And I thought to myself, he feels a little bit like a statue. Then I watched his pro day. It looked like he'd lost weight. He was a little more cut up. And it did look like... It did. I was like, it looked like he changed his body a little. Here's my question. Does he have an NFL arm to you?
Absolutely. I think here's where you miss in his athleticism. I looked at him at pro day. I'm like, boy, he was out in California working out. He must have got on one of those diets out there in California, right? I mean, he all slimmed up. I think his athleticism, if you watch his small area athleticism, his ability to slide and move within the pocket, and when you're 6'5", 240 pounds, and your ability to slide and move in the pocket, he's athletic enough to create, to extend. He's not going to beat you as a dynamic scrambler or a huge extender of plays. He's going to extend plays in a short frame moving around the pocket, but he can see over everybody. He has great anticipation. He has great accuracy within his throws. So, like anything, and I heard you say this in a great compliment of coaches, but if you watch coaches, great coaches, they're going to put their guys in position to do what they do well. Yeah, Tom Brady's never going to be mistaken. Yeah, this dynamic, athletic runner, but he's played for two great head coaches that have always put him in a position to do what he does well. Peyton Manning, great success when you put him in a position to do what he does well. Now, on the flip side of it, you can go to a Lamar Jackson, but they put him the coaches put him in a position to do what he does well. So if you take Kyle and say, hey, listen, we're going to have a guy that's going to be really smart, really prepared, extremely accurate with the ball. He's going to be able to slide, extend in short area, sliding around the pocket, finding throwing windows. He's going to be really successful. And I think that is the key, and that's the key to the coach, to put him in the position to do that.
I remember watching Dak Prescott, and I said when he came out of college, I said he reminds me of Tebow, but with a better arm. He has an NFL arm, whereas Tim was and they both have a lot of intangibles I liked. I don't think either one throw the ball like, Aaron Rodgers. Are you a little surprised? I mean, because one of the things that jumps out to me with Dak is the intangibles. He had a moment years ago, coach, and my audience made fun of me for this, but he had a moment years ago when he was on the sideline and he was just walking up the sideline and he walked by a garbage can and he threw a cup into it. He had had a sip and it didn't go into the garbage can. He went back and picked it up and put it in the garbage can. And I said, that's a conscientious kid. And I said, that tells me something. And everybody in my audience says, you're an idiot. That doesn't mean anything. But there is something about Dak that when did you spot it? What was different about him?
You know, it was really funny. It actually goes back to high school. We had an elite camp, and he came to a camp early on. And, you know, we wanted to love him. And he didn't throw the ball well. He wasn't very big or exceptionally fast, you know. But everyone said, hey, boy, he is a winner, the high school coach. And everyone looks and says, he just makes everyone around him better. So it became one of these. We wanted to love him. We gave him some things to work on. He came back to the elite camp a couple of weeks later. And we do kind of this thing in the weight room, hyping these kids up with all these great recruits, all your top players. And our strength coach came running up to me and said, we need to offer that kid and make him our quarterback immediately. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I've never seen the intangibles in a human being like he has. He just took over a workout of elite recruits, and he knows nobody, and every one of them are ready to follow him wherever he goes. And I said, boy, I hope he can throw the ball a little better than last time he was here, because he didn't throw very well. We walked out, and here was the great thing. You know what? He didn't throw it exceptionally well that day. But everything I asked him to improve on 6 weeks earlier, he had improved on. And I thought, and I said, you know what? If he can work, if he can take those steps in that short six-week period, and he is the ultimate it guy, we can go work with that. And I saw that in that workout. So we got him. And you know what? He was a much better freshman year. He was okay. Much better passer his sophomore year. Came back much better, much, much better player his junior year. He came back his senior year. And even though, if you go back to his college career, his junior year is when he had all the hype. We were the number one team in the country. He was a superior player his senior year to his junior year. And then all of a sudden, I thought, thinking, you know what? He still is going to continue to improve as a passer. He is going to continue to improve his game. But if you ever want to build an organization around somebody, this is the guy to do it. This is the guy that can lead you. And I remember NFL team said, boy, can he carry the team to a Super Bowl? I said, I don't know if he has the talent to put the whole team on his back and flat carry you to a Super Bowl as Aaron Rodgers or someone that you mentioned. But I'm going to tell you what, he can lead a team to a Super Bowl. And I think that is the difference with him. And then you're going to see, if you watched every year in the NFL, he's a much better player the next year. That goes back to your personality, his character, and who he is. And that's what makes him so special. But I'm going to tell you what, I don't know. I'm a big Dak fan. You watch the Cowboys team when he was on the team playing and when he wasn't this past year. And it wasn't just the skill set or his talent. It was the personality of the team. And that's what makes him different, is his leadership of running and leading that whole organization and the performance of everybody around him.
Finally, Coach, Dan, how good is Dan Mullen here? This is great stuff. I love Urban. He's a friend. Everywhere he's gone, he's worked. You know him better than anybody. I think he's going to work in the NFL because I think he's a quick learner. I think he's just a guy that would succeed in investments, in college, in broadcasting. I mean, Urban's just one of those guys. What's something I don't know about him? Like when you work with him, what's the secret sauce that you saw that maybe you've borrowed as a coach?
Well, I think this. I think, one, he's learned to adapt to his situation. You know, and if you look at his coaching career, to be successful at Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, Ohio State. Very, very different schools, very different organizations, different leagues, different style of player, different recruiting, different everything. And had great success at each of those. His ability to adapt to the players he has, his ability to motivate the players he has, and his ability to learn. And one thing I think that people maybe haven't talked about is look at the staff that he's put together. He didn't go say, call, hey, I want to go back and get my staff from Florida or Ohio State and bring them in here to the Jaguars. Okay, his offensive staff, you know, in bringing in Bevel and Schottenheimer, you know, I mean, guys with pro experience, defensive staff. So he has this fine mix of guys that, even though he hasn't been in the NFL a lot, he has some veteran NFL coaches on his staff. And I think his ability to just lead and run and organize and be a CEO of an organization, he does that as well as anybody, of motivating all, not just the players, but motivating the coaches, holding everybody accountable and getting everybody on the same page to become their best, is what he's done to be really successful in the coaching profession.
What a pleasure to have you. By the way, I looked at your schedule this morning. You get Bama and Georgia at home, so that's not bad. I mean, you got to reload a little bit on offense. You don't have Kyle Pitts or Trask, but I'd rather...
Well, hey, as you said, the Swamp's a lot. We get to play Georgia and Jacksonville, so that's kind of a 50-50.
Yeah.
But I will say this. If that Swamp you see in the picture behind me, if hopefully we get back to a little bit of normalcy, if we can pack that Swamp on... when Alabama rolls in. It'll be one of the loudest stadiums in the country next season.
Yeah, I've said this before. The two loudest stadiums I've been in, the Swamp and Autzen Stadium in Oregon, before they rebuilt it and it was built into the ground. You can't hear yourself think. 5 feet from my producer in Florida, I couldn't hear him. 5 feet, me to hear, could not hear him. Dan, it's great meeting you. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Have a great day. Go Gators.